Welcome to Starfield Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SMA Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us by the TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. The follow directions and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702, or you can also search for Starfleet Universe on call. Either one, you'll find us. And of course, a reminder, we do a co-broadcast on twitch.tv, and I'm always paying attention to the chat room over on Twitch. So you want to join the community there, feel free. I think that Chris and Iggy and all of them would be happy to have you along, and me too. Because I'm always happy to have more people in the chat room because it makes things so much more interesting, I think. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to follow me on Twitter, just go to SFU on call. That's the account I have there for this wonderful podcast. And of course, I have my personal one, which is Paul Franz, PAUFRANZ. And with that, just a reminder that I am proud to be an Orioles fan and also proud to be a Catholic. And of course, I love tech. So if any of those you don't like, you know, and bothers you to hear about it, well, then don't follow me. That's plain and simple. And of course, if you want to keep an eye on what's going on with Starfleet Universe, you know, on the client and also Starfleet Warlord, by all means, follow my Franz Games account. And you'll see things that's obviously relatively low, churn, so I'm not going to be with people. It's going to just constant stream of tweets so that you'll have to scroll past me every single time. So I try to keep it low, you know, on purpose, believe it or not. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. This week, we actually have a new product, which has just got published on Warhouse 23 Drive-Thru RPG and Wargame Vault, and that is Federation and Empire Planetary Operations 2021. That's now available on those e-tailers. So feel free to go grab it. And I'm not sure when they actually will have a hard copy available. I'm sorry, I did not check, but I didn't see that announced. So I'm assuming that that will be available at a later point and time. And of course, moving on to the SFB Online tournament, the Master Tournament is going on. I have to check that and actually have to play my game, to be honest. And I apologize to Seth because I've been slacking in that. And of course, I don't think any of us have contacted each other. So I apologize for not contacting him. When it comes to FedCom Library, there is more progress. We got already over 506 different squadron-sized ships from, you know, Federation to Klingons to all of the empires. The only thing that we're missing, obviously, is the LMC and the Omegas, which they don't have much available. But we don't have those. But we have a lot of the Alpha Octant. So if you want to play those, hey, we've got plenty of ships to choose from. And of course, fleet size, we have a little bit less, which is only 401 ships. And in some cases, there are no fleet size ships. For example, we have the skiffs. When it comes to the skiffs, there are no squadron size versus fleet size. I just marked them as squadron size because the one. I had to put in one or two categories. I don't have neither. So it's on the squadron size. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's just me. Which is good because I should be able to do what I wanted to do last week, and I'm hoping that you guys enjoy it as much as I enjoyed thinking this up. Now, this is not something I've implemented, and Lord knows this would not be the first time I've done one of those interesting idea exercises to see. This is something that would be interesting, because the one thing that came to mind, the reason why I even started thinking about this is I am a child of the 80s, okay? The child of the 80s, there was no internet. It was, fortunately, I actually found out about some BBSs that I could find, get the phone numbers for, so I could dial in to these BBSs. These days, I think a BBS in those days are akin to today, like a forum. That's a pretty close match, I think. You could go there, you could download files, you could post things on the chat, on the boards there, and chat with people. And it wouldn't, you post up, you disconnect, because each BBS had a limited number of connections that they actually they had, because they were physical connections. You actually would dial from you'd use your modem on your computer to dial up to a remote computer. This is how it worked. This is before the advent of the internet. As part of that world, there was no GUIs. Everything was, wow, Iggy, you're nuts. Sorry. Iggy just pointed out that one month he ran up a $400 phone bill calling BBS in Singapore. Now that, to you guys, some of y'all, that might seem crazy. Why would it cost $400 to call Singapore? This is when you're calling long distance cost a lot of money. Today, the funny part is, in my mind, the funny part is cell phone. Today, we call people on cell phones, and if it's for a foreign country, it costs more than calling down, to the other side of this country. Calling another country costs more than calling another person on the other side of the country, which to me is kind of crazy, but I'm sure that has to do with some old laws and so forth, and because you have to deal with other phone companies that don't have different agreements and all that kind of fun stuff. Oh, Chris, okay, you are a hacker. Chris is mentioning that he was calling all over the world, but wasn't paying a dollar any money for the phone calls. Well, Dave, actually, no, there hasn't always been an internet. At least not in my lifetime. There's been connectivity between computers, yes. I can't remember when the DARPANET was created. It's been so long. But anyway, the general point that you can still get 2600 magazines. I know, because last time I checked, which was like a year ago, last time I bought an edition was like 2 years ago. Yeah, which has some really cool stuff in the 2600 magazine. I'll admit that. Some really things, hacking things you can do. Yeah. But anyway, okay. Getting back. I'm getting sidetracked. I'm sorry. I'm chasing rabbits. He's the decadence. Whatever. I was too young to actually notice that kind of thing. I graduated high school in 84, so tells you how young I am or how old I am. But anyhow, the whole idea was it was a text-based interfaces, and overall, even though I think SMB Online is a It's pretty good. Is it great? No. Am I a UI genius? Oh, definitely not. Obviously, there's certain things that about SFB Online that I'm very proud of some of the ideas that I came up with and some of the ideas I implemented. For example, the whole I don't think I came up with the idea, but I implemented it, and I think it looks pretty darn good. Which is the when you launch a seeking weapon, you can click on that seeking weapon, and it will create an arrow from that seeking weapon pointing directly to the target that it is. Now, in SFB also, the one thing I'm not sure people know, but it is there, which is that if at any point in time that you actually, you identify the drone or seeking weapon, basically identify the target so that you know where the target is. When you click on that seeking weapon, at that point, then you get the arrow to say, okay, it's going to this target. I'm not sure that's a feature people know about for SFB Online, but it is there. I have to double check if I had that in FedCom. I'm sure Chris could tell me because he's been playing with Seth quite a bit. Which reminds me, I have to play my game against Seth. It's been 2 weeks, and I apologize for not contacting him. And for those people, yes, it is that time of year again. It is football season, at least preseason. And, of course, our information for Thursday night's games comes from you, Guest Dave. And Guest Dave just reminds us that the Steelers are currently beating the Eagles 21-16 late in the third quarter. Of course, by the time you hear this, you will not care. Well, that's on the podcast, obviously. And we're currently Patriots. Or is that game over, Dave? Or are they still running? Because Patriots definitely are winning 9-7 over the Washington. He says it's over. He says it's Patriots over. Okay, still they're also late third. Okay, I just want to make sure because when you say that, it makes it sound like the game is over. No. But anyway, let's get back to what I was discussing. And that is a text-based interface. Now, can you play Starfleet Battles or Federation Commander or whatever using a text-based interface? It's possible. Okay. Chris mentioned that most probably I had them on both. And Chris says he hates football. I don't hate football. It's just that I love baseball so much that I eschew football until baseball season ends. And baseball season doesn't end until October. Like going into late October, possibly end October. So by the time I get around to watching any football, half the games are already over. So in this case, invariably I don't watch football games either, just because it's like, what's the point at this moment of time? Now, obviously, the issue this year is my dear sweet Orioles are sucking dirt. I'm not sure what I have to check to see when the last time they won a game. But back to the point. So, a text-based interface, I forgot what the game was. But basically, it was kind of a Star Trek-based game, which was text-based. It's old DOS. I think it was DOS-based game where you had your sectors. You had to clear out the sectors of Klingons and other things, and you were just going around the board, and the warp factor, that's it. Chris is correct, warp factor. And it was kind of cool. Now, I'm not saying that that's the kind of game that I'd want to play. This kind of game I'm imagining. What I was imagining more of is something more along the lines of Zork. Being a child of the 80s, Zork was a basically it's a text-based RPG. Is what it comes down to. That it's called actually today. The category is called interactive fiction, is what it is. It's interactive fiction is a pretty broad category overall. The idea of interactive fiction, it depends upon what kind you have. Some of them, some interactive fiction is just that interactive fiction. It's pieces of fiction that are written, and the whole idea is that you explore this world and you find out little bits of information by you just with interacting with the characters. So you discover the story of these characters of this whole world, you know, and that's the way it's done. Which I think is a really yeah. It was Infocom, yes, Chris. Zork 1, 2, and 3. I think that's kind of an interesting idea of way of doing fiction. Now, obviously, most people, when it comes to fiction, it's true fiction, like the whole idea of storytelling, that the author is telling a story, and then those interactions are then created by the teller, instead of you discovering what the story is. But you know, to me, that's kind of an interesting way of approaching it. And then, of course, there's other interaction fiction, which is something more like Zork, which is more of a game than a piece of fiction, where you're trying, you know, you bumble around, you find out this, and this, and it's like any other game where there is a goal to the game and to complete the puzzle. And so that's another way of interactive fiction. In this case, I'm the whole, in my mind, the whole idea of what I'm thinking about is along the lines of playing a game using a text-based interface. Because as I mentioned, I am not great at UIs. And I figure, you know, if I'm not great at UIs, what can I do? What would be the perfect game for me? Because to me, I've always liked text-based interfaces. Now, the one thing there's certain things that I really find fascinating and have not worked on. And I, like, for example, I'm sure some of you, if you listen to me long enough, you probably heard me talk about it. But I'll bring it up now for those people who have not been with me that long. That is, there is a DOS-based game. I think you can still get it. And like I'm not sure if it's available on GOG or not. My guess is that it is. And that is, it's called Omega. Omega was a tank game. The whole idea of this tank game is that you have a tank, and in that tank you program the tank, is what you're doing, to run around this board that they have, and you then will fight another tank, which is back in the day, I'm not sure. I don't think it was. I think it was completely computer based. I think it was completely computer based. You know, that you're playing against a computer opponent, and you created your own AI. I think you might have been able to have it so that you have, you know, a real person. They create their own AI, and then you guys fight it out on the board. Which reminds me more of a game which I'm not sure many people know of, which is called Core War. Which is the whole idea of that is basically you are creating your own you're creating electronic entity, the best way I can describe it. I was gonna say virus, but it's not really a virus. The whole idea is that this electronic code, it's trying to survive. And you have usually in Core War, you have your creature, and then you have an opponent's creature, and then they fight it out. And to see, because there are just different approaches to killing your opponent. The whole idea is that you got to make sure that basically a fault occurs in their program, in which case the program dies at that point. Which is, Core War. It's an awesome game. Actually, they can still get it. I've seen it. I just have not played it. And the funny part to me is that even though I really love interactive fiction, I don't play enough of it. I really should play more of it, is what I should do. But the whole idea of a text-based interface, to me, just fascinates me. The remove all the Chrome. The whole idea of let's get down to the core of this, because a lot of, again, I'm a child of the 80s, so there was back in the day when they first came up with GUIs. GUIs were, for some people, were dreadful. The people had chewed them. Why would you ever use a GUI when you have this wonderful interface that's text-based? It's short, sweet. It can get things done. You don't have all of these pretty pictures to get in your way. Obviously today, I don't think most people would agree with that, and I tend to agree with the fact that GUIs, they're nice. They definitely can help things. And I've not tried this yet, which is, I'm not sure if many people, back in the day, there was a DOS-based desktop thing, which was called Desk View, which allowed you to run multiple processes in different windows, which is quite cool. I thought the whole idea, I still think to this day, the whole idea of something like that is really cool. Now, today you can do kind of like that using a program called Tmux. It's kind of like, I was thinking about it the other day, and basically Tmux is like a tile-based GUI, tile-based UI, but it's completely text-based. So, yeah, GUIs are, I agree, GUIs are a nightmare for programmers. Especially since, that's why a lot of us, we prefer the back end. Let's not worry about the UI. Tiling Windows Manager, thank you. Yeah, I have not had a chance to really. I played around with one for a bit. It wasn't Qtile. Xmonad is what it was. Xmonad. And unfortunately, I have to return my. Actually, that's the fun part. I'm supposed to return this one per computer for my work. And they've yet to send me the boxes to return it. Which reminds me, what I need to do is actually send him email the guy, because he wanted my phone number. It's like, okay, here's my phone number. I gave him my work phone number, which should then automatically forward to my cell phone. So it's like, here's a phone number. It's like, okay, if you need something other than that, please, I'm wondering if he looked at it and went, okay, I need your real, not the, most people don't call me. If you want to call me, that's fine. Leave a message, because otherwise I'm not going to call you back, because I don't know who you are. And these days, this day and age, No, I don't know. Yeah, swing actually is pretty good when it comes to a UI environment to for Java. It's not bad, you know. I like it, you know, because it works, and Lord knows it did a lot of programming in it. Okay, getting back to what this podcast is supposed to be all about for tonight, and that is the whole idea of text-based SFB. Okay, actually, that reminds me. Let me just check one thing. Unfortunately, my computer restarted and I forgot about one thing, which I need to look at. I'm hoping, beyond a hope, because I don't know if I actually saved it or not. I don't think I saved it. Let's go like this. I didn't save it. Crap. Actually, I think I do have it. Let me just give me a sec, guys. Now, oh, there it is. I think it's right there. Yeah, here it is. Here it is. I found it. Ah. Okay. There. I need that. Okay, fine. Now I'm set. Okay, I apologize for that wait. Yeah. That's basically for most part, the idea, Chris, which is for those people that didn't read Chris, which is that text based could have so that each side maintains a map. Now, obviously, the one thing that could be done, and it's not pretty, it works because I've done it in the past, which is for those people who've actually done, I mean, this is many, many years ago now, played SFB using play by email back in the day when what we actually did was we created a text-based map. You actually can have it. So using text, slashes and dashes, you actually can create hex-based map using that. It's interesting. It's actually quite interesting that it can be done. Obviously, the key there was that you had to make sure that when the map was read, that the font you used was, fixed-based font like Cori or New or like on Mac they have what's called Monaco, and there's other fixed fonts that you can use, and that worked out really well. I don't have any examples on me right now. I should have I did not think about having that prepped, so I apologize for that. But anyway, when I get back to what I wanted to show you guys, which is at least to start off with, which is of course part of any text-based you quote unquote UI per it'd be it's more of a command line, which is commands themselves. And I like that idea of using commands because yeah, oh, I understood. Again, you can use end curses. Then you can create a TUI. And actually, that reminds me, many, many years ago, Actually, I looked into, I think I might still have the book. I have to look around here. I might still have it, which I used to have. At one point, I'm not sure if I still do that, because I've been cleaning up my books to cut back on what I've got so that I only maintain what I need, you know. And some of these actually I probably should get rid of, because I got like Nmap, network scanning. I haven't used Nmap for years, and that book is probably pretty old by now. I'm not sure how useful it is. Actually, there's one that I think is kind of interesting. It's an old technology. The whole idea was peer-to-peer in Java, using Java. And it's this. It's JXTA. So the background of the history of peer-to-peer, an operation of peer-to-peer solutions, insight into Jux's role in advancing peer-to-peer paradigm as a viable enterprise solution, which is, I think I've looked at this, looked for it lately, and I don't think I actually can, you know, no one's even worked on the whole idea of peer-to-peer, because peer-to-peer has, for the most part, fallen out of favor. We're all gone back to client server, which is the weird part, because of, when you think about computers, we start with the classic client server. Everyone has a terminal. You're going against a big mainframe. Then we go, no, that's the wrong way of doing it. We need to do peer to peer. We need to have it so each little computer can talk to all the other little computers. And we don't need one big computer. And so people really went for, you know, peer to peer. You know, the whole I'm thinking about, well, obviously BitTorrent is an example of that. You know, it's a peer-to-peer network of the files, and you can get pieces over from across the network, and then you get pieced together when it gets to your computer. What's the other one I'm thinking about? I think it was the one that got put out of business for sharing music. Damn, I can't remember. I can picture the logo. I just can't remember what the name of it was. But anyway, that was also, you know, the whole idea was peer-to-peer. You know, there was no server, you know. And that, therefore, it makes it really hard to shut down. And then we went, you know, peer-to-peer is Napster. Thank you, Dave. And then we went, you know, peer-to-peer is just way too complicated. There's too many issues. Because Lord knows, if you think about the internet, it's basically meant for client server. So we all went back to client server. You know, you have the clients serving one big mainframe. In this case, they're not mainframes anymore. They're like Linux boxes, you know, or Linux boxes using running all kinds of VMs, which are emulated Linux boxes. Which, of course, that was one of the things that scares the crap out of me, because if ever there's a single 0-day flaw in like all versions of Linux, we're all screwed. We're all screwed. It's gonna be a field day of the hackers. You know, it's just scary. Okay, so I came up. I have not worked on this since last week. So I apologize. And that is, these are some simple commands. The whole idea is you have a command, you execute it, it comes back with results. You know, first one, obviously, is simple commands, move, you specify the unit name, and then how you're going to move. Right, left, straight, slip right, slip left, back right and back left, and reverse. Or this probably should be about face, what it really should be. Probably about face, because reverse indicates that you're actually going, instead of going forward, you're actually trying to change your speed into a negative speed. So you're going backwards with your, you're facing forward, but you're going backwards. And, you know, the whole idea of back right and back left is, okay, here's, you know, what you're facing is, you know, my hand up, but down and back, let's say, to, in this case, to the left for me, my looks to the right for you guys who are on the video, that'd be by, like, back, me back left, and then over here is, you know, back right. So it's basically, it's a het is what it would be. Now, the last three, those are guaranteed to be a het. The middle two, you know, step right, they cannot never be a het. But right and left, the first two, those could possibly be a het. So I'm not taking into consideration the use of hets, you know, to move. It's a plain simple command to move. Another simple command, which is fire. Now, in this would work wonderfully for, like, FedCom, because in FedCom, you don't have, firing is not secret. And in this case, this would, you know, this would fire, you give the weapon abbreviation, for example, Hellbores, HB, dash letter, okay, HB dash A. And at, and then you give the target, you know, the unit name for the target, and that then it would announce the firing of that weapon to that location. Now, obviously, there's other things that can actually be done behind the scenes. You can actually fire the weapon. You could actually roll the dice. Might even in that case, if it did that, it'd have to prompt you. Is there any EW adjustments that you know of? Because if you want to play with EW, some of you have to have some more commands to delineate EW. Because the biggest issue with EW, really, is that obviously it adds modifiers to everything. It also, you have to look at the range, because EW is only effective out when it comes to, I think it's loaned EW, is only effective out to a certain range. I think it's range 15, if I recall correctly. So then you have to say, okay, well, this unit is loaning, let's say, 2 points of ECCM or you know, ECCM to unit, this other unit over here. As long as those two units stay within range 15, you're fine. But after that, then it's not supposed to be work at all. And in that case, it gets complicated, because at that point, does the computer say, okay, the current adjustment is this, and then, you know, if you ask, then you, of course, you're going to ask the question, why, when you're greater than 15 hexes, like, oh, I don't have, what happened to the EW that's being borrowed? It's like, you know, it shows that you're greater range. But, you know, would they want the interface to actually spit that out and give all that information to begin with? Or would you have to ask a question like why, or put a question mark and go question mark? In that case, it would then explain how that number came to be. You know? But it'd be interesting. Launch, you know, it would know what kind of, you know, the weapon abbreviation, you know, plasma, PL, you know, letter, dash A. And so plasma, A, and also could be the type, because here's the thing, which is, of course, with, the last issue with plasmas, though, and of course, with plasmas, you have to load the plasma. So it has to know what kind of plasma it's actually loaded in the torpedo tube. Obviously, the first go around, you wouldn't want it to actually have to do that. You'd say, okay, simple, keep it simple, keep it dumb. Just have it so as you announce, okay, it's going to be a type R torpedo or type S or so forth. You might have some minor checks in place to say, okay, what, to try to launch a Type R from a Type S torpedo tube. It's like, oh, you can't do that. That's illegal. It's impossible to do. Now, obviously, here's always the gotcha, as I've mentioned multiple times, when it comes to enforcing the application of rules. The big issue with forcing the actual application of rules is that if you ever want to play test an idea, for example, let's say that you want this new rule that you can launch a plasma R torpedo from a plasma S torpedo tube, but to do that, it's basically what the hydrants do with their fusions, and it's a suicide overload. So in addition to, you know, basically you've overblown the torpedo tube. You get the torpedo, it gets actually launched, but after that, the actual plasma launcher explodes and it causes, that gets rid of that, and you also do two additional internals. You know, something along those lines, which I think, actually, I kind of like that idea of a rule. I think it's kind of a neat rule to play around with. But, you know, you couldn't be able to do it if when you start enforcing rules. Now, obviously, in SFB Online, you can actually do that. That's actually enforced now that, you know, the plasma Rs aren't available. So, you know, though, to get around that, then what you do is you actually add that unit by hand onto the board. And I forget if it requires you to actually, I know you can specify a launching unit. I'm not sure if a launching unit is required or not. I'm pretty sure that it's not, because then you have the whole issue with XXX drones. Oh, what was it? There's one scenario where it basically was, I forget what it was, a, I think it was a, I'm pretty sure it was a base. I had to fend off this large swarm of drones because they were ballistically targeted, long distance targeted drones, basically. The whole idea being is that you launch them from long distance, not even tactical distance away, and then it would go. The whole idea is that you'd have these then points. You go, it would go here, and then finally go in towards the base or whatever target you have, you know, whether it's a base or possibly a planet. You know, I'm not sure actually planets and drones. I forget. I'd have to look it up. That I'm going down a rabbit hole when it comes to rules that things I don't know. Like, I don't know if atmosphere affects drones. I know, and whether if it does, does it destroy the drone before it actually, when it enters the atmosphere, does it explode in mid, you know, so things like that. Okay, moving on. Another one, of course, is the idea of a scan query. The idea of a scan is, it's a UI element to help the players to know what is near it. Now, to be honest, this idea of this actually came from the possibility of taking this, incorporating it into a language that then could be used for developing an AI engine. So that, you know, I can develop an AI, but then that could be modified, possibly even the whole idea of, because I know I've mentioned before, the whole idea of having so people develop programs for automated an automated game, just like Omega, because I like Omega. I like the whole idea of Omega. I think it's such a cool idea. But in the case of, also I've mentioned before, which is the whole idea of having an AI which is can be the source is out there, and players can develop the AI or an AI, possibly even do a crowdsourcing kind of idea where people can improve the AI, develop that AI, so that we can start small, simple, and keep adding to it, so it becomes an actual, not player, but a really good robot. Well, a really good robot player is what I think it could in theory become. You know, I'm not talking about machine learning, and machine learning, I think, really doesn't apply to SFB. It doesn't, because there are too many rules, too many variables in place. Machine learning, and like how, you know, they had it so that they taught the computer the rules for Go, and then say, learn what's the best way to play the game. And you can do that, because at that point you've got a set of rules for the game, which you've told the computer. Because at some point you've got to tell the computer at the very least what the rules are of this game, for it to develop strategies and so forth for playing that game. You know, as I think, usually an iterative approach of just playing game after game after game. You can set it up to it plays itself, the whole idea. But at the very beginning, you have to be able to tell the computer what the rules are, what it can and cannot do. Yeah, oh yeah, Go is very simple. Chess is also relatively simple when it comes to the rules. There aren't that many. You know, the complicated part about chess is, of course, that each piece has a different set of rules. When it comes to actions that they can take, like they can do. And of course, there's some special actions in chess. Yeah, I agree. But also, you know, after I thought about, you know, the whole AI idea, or at least the way of maybe testing the robot player, you know, I thought, you know, this would be kind of cool from a UI perspective, because I already have that in the UI for SFB Online. In that, you know, it doesn't have the querying ability, but it has the ability to show you, here's the targets, you know, here's your units, this is the current range. And, you know, that could be something, obviously, add-ons. You can, you know, you track, you know, a track range between here and here, and so have, so you can do a list, they'll list the trackings, and it could say, okay, here, this unit and the distance between this unit and this unit are this. Possibly set up alarms, you know, if you want to do that. But that was, Chris, that was actually a shocking, to me, quite shocking thing, which was that Seth brought, that, you know, we're missing certain features that are in SFB that really would be good if we had in FedCom. I'm like, okay, oh, you're right. And the one that I found shocking that he asked for, which was the ability to set alarms, basically impulse-based alarms. I'm going, what? The reason why it shocked me was that I didn't think anyone actually used them. You know? But it makes me feel good that they're actually somebody using them, you know. So, moving on, you know, you have, of course, this a flat. What's the range between this unit and this hex, or this unit and this unit? You know, or even if you want to, what the heck? Between two hexes, between this hex and this hex, what it is? You know, what is the range? Because you might have an idea of, okay, you, wow, Well, yeah, I'm glad. Yeah. Oh, I understood, Chris, when you mentioned Impulse 25. Yeah, the whole idea of reminding you that Impulse 25 is your last time you can actually fire something and have that weapon ready by Impulse 1. Except for, of course, the particle cannons. Blasphemy Scatter Pack. That's another good one. To remind you when you're supposed to blossom a scatter pack. Got a good point there. But I was shocked because actually I don't use the import ones, which I probably should more often. I've done some when it comes to range, which I need to do more often because there are certain times when you play in a game, but range is critically important, and that's many, many moons ago. Jeez, it's been a few years now, I think, where I played a tournament game, and part of that tournament game is that what caught me, what doomed me, was that my opponent got within range 8. Well, range is kind of important with scatter. Well, with a definitely range is important with scatter pack when it comes to if you have a scatter pack set up as basically a floating nuclear space mine. That is, don't launch the scatter pack until a ship was within 10, 10 hexes or something like along those lines. And of course, good point there, Chris. Chris is pointing out anything in the game where there's an X impulse delay, which is kind of, it's more of alarm, it's more of like a reminder to tell you Wow. I have to think that. This meaning the what we call them. Currently, we call them an alarm. But in theory, we could send them out as set them as remind call them reminders instead of alarms. So, Chris just mentioned that there's a lot of examples of things you can use those alarms for. Even just the impulse alarm, I know there's the impulse alarm, there's the range alarm. Because I think there's some more alarms, I can't remember off the top of my head. But those were the two big ones when it comes to SFB. Moving on, of course, direction. The whole idea of direction is just plain simple, is that you don't have to have the map in front of you to and figure and try to figure out what is your shield. So, you have this unit to this unit, which the computer knows what the facing is, so it can then report, okay, what's the shield that the second unit is off the first unit. So in case of if you have unit one here and unit two here, one you have it so that the unit two is right in front of unit one, okay, it's obviously going to be off of shield number one. So it'd be direction unit one to unit two, and it'd say, okay, that's shield number one. Locations, in the case of, in some cases, some people might have a good idea in their head of what the map looks like. Which in my mind is a great thing, in that if you can do that or practice doing that, in my mind, it's a way of exercising your brain. Because I think that's one thing they mention about like Alzheimer's and so forth, is that if you exercise your brain more, it helps. I think that that's one thing they've mentioned. And if that's not the case, please be feel free to email me at sfuoncall@gmail.com. And of course, something simple, which is the status of a unit. And that could be in the case of, let's say a plasma. It would have to announce what's the impulse that I got launched. how much damage has currently been has it currently taken? And of course, part of that status is going to be location. So that's going to be part of the location. Now, when it comes to ship, what I was thinking along the lines is something which I probably should work more on when it comes to the client, which is a text-based version of the SSD. And that sounds weird, but my dear long time, actually, he's now back. Used to play SFB Online more, and a guy named of Les LeBlanc. And Les LeBlanc did something which no one has ever done. No one. At least I haven't heard them, and which was what he did is he set up, he has a demo account and he has his own account, and he transferred between himself and a demo account. Well, because it's a demo account, the only the SSD is going to be a text-based SSD. That's the way it works. But the one thing I've never done is actually make sure that that still works properly, and currently it doesn't. It shows the information, you just can't edit it. So if there's damage to be taken to it, you want like a, not that you want to damage it will work fine. It's if you want to repair it, you can't fix it. So it's like, wow. And Les told me about this, because, you know, why is there an issue? Then he actually showed me a video, and I went, oh, that's why it's an issue. And I think that might be actually the whole idea of having a text-based SSD is a good thing. Because what you can do is, in this case, you can have it so it looks sort of along the lines. This is not it. This is a little different. But the whole idea would be like one APR, one auxiliary. I'll have to look at that in just a moment. And let me just do a quick look here. And excuse me. Does it still go to the same location? It's in there. Right. And I think I spit it out to the screen. That's what I did. So I think it's lost. Yeah, it's lost. Okay, but the whole idea was that, you know, you have one dash, you know, basically shows the number of each system. In the case of, obviously, like phasers, it would show you, you know, how many phasers you have and what are the, I think it had it so that it actually showed, it grouped up the phasers into the different arcs. And, well, yeah, different arcs, and of course the phaser numbers and things like that, so that you could see what the status of the ship was in a really easy to read format when it comes to text based. So I felt like that was a good idea for text based, you know, because, and that was one of the reasons I thought, you know, there's different things, there's different features that you'd have to definitely have to add here. Some of those I'm thinking about, I'm not sure how you would do it. For example, EAs. How do you do EAs? How? You know, for EAs, you have to specify, of course, your speed plot. You could then, after you could easily go in, I was thinking about, you could do a start EA. At that point, it goes into a special mode, where you actually are specifying different systems, and you could then do like a status, you know, this status unit, and then it would give you EA for that unit instead of giving it And maybe you have to do a status like dash full or something like that to give a full both of the SSD and of the EA. And you have to specify like the speed plot, how much you're putting energy into this weapon, transporters, tractor, all those different possible EA entry boxes. Which again, it could be shown like, as I imagined, the quote-unquote text-based SSD, quote-unquote, which is basically a summarization of the boxes, which if you, for those of you who've been with me for a while, know that's when Steve, when I originally talked to Steve Cole about doing the SSDs way back when, he imagined me just, because he saw the original SFB online client. The original SFB online client was a Visual Basic client, which basically was this grid of types of system boxes and a number of how many of those boxes were left. And that's what Steve Cole thought I was still doing. And to me, we both made assumptions and so forth. And that's when he got really hot on the collar when he found out what we actually were doing. He made assumptions, I made assumptions, and so we never really communicated. I knew what I was talking about. I thought he knew what I was saying. I'm sure, my guess is that if I was showing him what I was doing, he would have freaked out from the beginning and said, no, you can't do that. And things would be a little bit different. My guess is what we would have been doing for many years at SFB Online is we would have just had text-based SSDs. I'm not sure if we would ever have gotten the graphical SSDs, and I'm not sure if we ever would have gotten the following of people that wanted to play SFB Online for those many, many years. So, you know, to me, it worked out in the end for me. I understand it. Steve thinks it was the downfall of him, in which he, you know, rightly so in some cases, you know, because people were telling him that basically, why do I need to pay for it when I can get it for free, you know, from this source and this source, and they're grabbing right from the client itself. Now, in my mind, I still don't see, you know, in my mind, the people who would grab it from online and then print them out, they're not the people going to buy the SSDs anyway. You know, I always thought that those people were the collectors. Yeah, they would buy the SSDs so they could have the ships, you know, but they want to play it. Well, of course, the whole idea of ADB was to sell product. So, however that was, it wasn't really didn't matter after the product was sold. So, in any case, I think I'll wrap it up there. So, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.